Hey guys, welcome to the Touchline Podcast. This is episode 11, right? I'm Richard. We got Brett here, who has allowed me to join him again for another exciting edition of the Touchline.
Sir, you might as well just become a regular co-host.
That's cool. I'll have to work on the benefits.
Yeah, I'll work on the contract. I know Devin was working on one, and we couldn't get him any max money.
Do I at least get like dental or, you know, 401k or something? Maybe a bag of Cheetos.
I don't know how that works. I just know Devin wanted money and a house.
Maybe take like a bag of chips or something. That'll do.
Well, I do work for Frito-Lay, so we might be able to make that work.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'm talking about. All right. Well, yeah, so we got a lot to talk about. I think we missed doing one last week, so we get to talk about two games, and then we'll look forward to our game 2 weeks from now, because RSL's on a bye this week, and we'll talk a little bit about how we're liking the formation, talk a little bit about the rest of the league, and how we think things are shaking out so far. So I guess let's kind of roll through Portland, right?
Yep. What'd you think of Portland?
You know, from what I could tell, I had to watch most of the game on my phone, so it's not wasn't the best viewing experience, but, you know, it did seem like we were a little bit discombobulated for a lot of the game, still trying to work out where each other were supposed to be. One thing that I thought was kind of interesting, you know, everyone sees soccer a little differently, but you know, the media, coach, they kind of praised RSL's defensive efforts because we got a shutout. And, I mean, it was great that we got a shutout, but I don't think that our defense, I mean, we had a lot of clearances, and they kept pumping balls into the box and stuff. We did a good job clearing them, but there was a lot of emergency defending going on. And, you know, I think on a different day, Portland definitely should have laid a few on us.
Yeah, I have to agree. I ain't going to really look at Portland as a win or a loss. It's more, it's that first game. Usually those first games, it's a filling out process. You're still figuring out your guys, your formations. You're still trying to get your chemistry down and stuff like that. I know Raimondo was outstanding. I mean, the dude just, he proved why he's probably the best MLS goalkeeper. And the fact that he hasn't ever won MLS Goalkeeper of the Year is crazy. But I think it was different for RSL because, you know, they got a lot of new guys starting, a new formation, so they're still having that filling out period, and you could tell that throughout the match. I mean, as the match went on, you could understand, and especially watching it, you could understand that the team was figuring out how to play and how to play within that new formation.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like the forwards, you know, Jaime, Sabo, Garcia, they seem to understand where they're supposed to be a lot of the time. I think they could probably be a little wider sometimes. And then, you know, the defenders, they could position themselves better in a lot of situations. We'll talk about that, especially in the Philly game. But it seems like the midfield, especially like Gil and Morales, like keeping connected with the back seems to have a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, and that's something that you totally understood watching that Portland game, is this entire team, including the forwards, are committed to the defense.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see because generally, especially in that diamond formation, because of how many midfielders there was, and you had one guy, 9 times out of 10, Beckerman, who would sit back and be that first defender, and the wings would also get on defense, that our forwards kind of got a little lazy playing up top. And so it's nice to see in this formation that they're forcing themselves to play defensively.
Yeah, Garcia and Jaime definitely seem to be willing to track back, which is necessary, and, you know, it's good of them to realize that they need to do that. It's kind of interesting. I was thinking, and maybe I'm totally off base here, but it seemed like, you know, when we were playing the diamond, you'd have we would go in the attack and you have Beckerman come forward into the attack, and or, you know, he would slide over to cover a different space. And a lot of times you would have Ned, or, I mean, when Will was here, he would do that really well, where they would kind of fill back in to cover that space, right? Or if the ball would get turned over, there would be somebody there to help the defenders out, where it seems like there's been a lot of times early in the season where that hasn't been the case. We've turned it over, and everybody's looking for buckets to start bailing water.
Yeah, and I think that's the huge thing that especially this team's going to be preaching this year is defense, because I think it kind of showed last year, especially in the playoffs, that big loss we took to LA to end the year, that defense was lacking that game. And so it's nice to see that that's the focus this year, is it's on defense. Maybe not we're not out to outscore you, but we're going to make sure you don't outscore us.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So far, I'm not seeing. I mean, people are trying. You know, they'll track back when the other team establishes possession. But it seems like we're even more open to counterattacks than we were before. We're having a hard time, it seems like, in that transition period. Even though I think we have more team speed overall than we did before.
Yeah, I think one thing I really do like about this formation, though, and I saw a lot in the Philly game, is Garcia would get back to play defense, and he'd be back with our defensive line, but the minute that somebody got the ball, they instantly looked for him, and as soon as he got the ball at his feet, knowing how fast Garcia is, he was, you know, in the midfield with it before they could figure out what was going on. And I think a speedster like that actually helped out in that aspect.
Yeah.
But I know one thing I don't like about this formation is it kind of seems like we lose possession in the midfield a lot.
Do you think that's because people don't understand where each other are supposed to be, or they're still so used to where the players used to be, you know, so they're passing it into those spaces and the guys aren't there anymore?
I think that has to do a lot with it, is these guys are still trying to figure it out. But I'm wondering if maybe because we're adding a third attacker, we're kind of sacrificing a guy like a Luke Mulholland there in the middle, who's more a possession-based guy and who will take care of the ball and not get sloppy with passes.
Yeah, I think too, you know, with the way this formation, I'm picturing it working is, you know, before we were super narrow, right, with the diamond, and we relied on Beltran and Winger to, you know, get out wide. I mean, Morales would sometimes get out there wide, but that was about it, right? And now you got two guys who should have their heels on the sideline all the time, pretty much. So, you know, that kind of leaves holes elsewhere on the field, right?
Yeah.
And so just trying to use that space, different space.
Yeah, and an idea I was playing with today is I was wondering maybe if we go back to using Garcia as that 60th minute sub, especially with the altitude and teams are starting to wear down, then we bring in that speedster and maybe put Gil up top to play with those strikers, and he can kind of be their playmaker up there, and bringing in Luke to help maintain that midfield. And another part of me is wondering maybe if that's just that role that, you know, it wasn't that sexy soccer player that we all like and everything, but now that he's gone, I'm wondering if Ned Grabovoi had a lot more to do with that midfield than we all wanted to admit.
Oh, well, Ned, I mean, everyone says he's underrated, and he is great with possession and understanding, you know, passing lanes and where to go and find space and stuff. So I definitely think, you know, we'll miss his tactical awareness and his ability to help link players. I mean, you could see that with the NYCFC game this week when they were playing the Revolution, you know, how he would, you know, link play together so well. So, you know, he's all about, you know, just getting the ball and then passing it to the next guy instead of, you know, Velasquez, you know, his cohort that also came from RSL. You know, he was all about getting the ball and seeing if he could make a highlight film.
Yeah. So what did you think of Portland themselves, though?
I thought it was – one thing that I was disappointed with RSL was that, you know, they were down to kind of their third and fourth string defensive midfielders, right?
Okay.
And I thought that our offense would be able to exploit that a lot more than we did. I thought that their midfield played really well considering how patched it was. This week Chara came back because he didn't play against us. And I think, you know, once they get some of their players back healthy, like Chara, I mean, I think they'll be all right. Audie, you know, their big striker, for all of his falling down that he does, which he seems to do a lot. I mean, I really like him, and, you know, he seems to hold up the ball pretty well when he stays on his feet.
Yeah. I mean, they held on and tied a Los Angeles team, they don't have Landon Donovan, but it's still LA. They still have big-time players.
Yeah, Portland probably should have won that game, but they gave up a goal at the very end. So, good old Alan Gooney Gordon. So,
yes. Can't give that guy a shot in the 90th minute.
Yeah, I mean, I like Portland's defense. I'm not sure about their keeper. I guess I'd have to watch some more games to see really how he fits in, you know, because he's new. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big fan of Powell and... Is there the one, Villafania? I like both of them, and, you know, Borchers is only going to help their communication and organization back there, so.
Yeah. You know, as long as that team can stay healthy, I think they can make, I'm not going to go out and say they make the MLS Cup or anything like that, but they're going to be a team come playoff time that you just don't want to see. Because last year, this is the defense that that team last year needed.
Yeah.
All they did was really add Borchers. So it shows you how valuable Borchers is to a defense. And as long as their offense can stay clicking, and add in the fact that they still got Will Johnson to come back too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would, if they don't make the playoffs this year, that would be hugely disappointing for Portland. I mean, they have, unless they just get ravaged by injuries, I mean, they already have Will Johnson out, and, you know, Zemanski got hurt, and different players have been out for a while, but, I mean, I guess if they start having to rely on some of their backup center backs and stuff again, maybe it could get ugly, but they really should make the playoffs, I would say.
Yeah. And hopefully Will's able to get back, but I guess we now have an RSL of the West to add to that RSL of the East.
That's right. Our players just end up everywhere.
Everybody wants us.
In groups. So, yeah, how about Philly? What was your take on that game?
That, you know, I've seen soccer played in Italy. I've watched it played in Brazil, Middle East. Everywhere, man. When my son was born, 2 o'clock in the morning, I was watching, I think it was some league in Japan, and this is straight up the strangest game I have ever seen. It had everything you'd ever ask for out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, we only lacked like a triple red card fiasco or something like that.
Yeah, and there was, and you figured in the 90th minute there's going to be one handed out.
I know, right? That's the way it was headed. I thought for sure there at the end when they had that free kick, Philly did, I'm like, oh, yeah. this isn't going to be good. Just the way that game was. So how do you think it differed from the Philly game? Or the Portland game, I mean.
I think people within, and I mean people as in the team, I think they finally started to figure out their roles and everything like that. Add in Phillips. Him being healthy and being able to play now, you could tell he helped out a lot. He was able to use a lot of speed to get up the wing, allow, you know, when they were on offense, especially on counters on his side, he was able to get forward and kind of give them a fourth midfielder to be playing with. And so it was nice to see him play like that.
Yeah.
The team, you could tell, was kind of understanding a lot more what they're supposed to do and what they're not supposed to do, and it was nice to see.
Let me get your opinion on something. I've had two hypotheses for what happened in the second half. So in the first half, there were several runs that Phillips made. You know, we have the ball. Would that be on our right side? You know, so like Tony would have the ball, or you know, we'd have the ball over on that side somewhere. And, you know, Phillips would be all by himself, and so they'd make that cross-field pass all the way to Phillips, and, you know, he'd make a run. So there were a couple times, especially early in the game, where he did that. A few times it didn't end well. You know, we turned it over, but then a few times we had great chances, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the second half, I noticed that exact same situation a bunch of times. And even, I guess, later on in the first half, and it seemed like we just kind of ignored him. And I was trying to decide if it was because, you know, he came out later because I guess he re-aggravated his hamstring and Mansali came in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if he was in that space but they knew, you know, he couldn't chase it down, or if the second reason, which is what I thought of first, was that Javi kind of realized the trouble that we kept getting ourselves into when Phillips got so far forward, and so he was on purpose not choosing to pass that ball over there.
It makes sense.
And maybe it was just coincidence, but I saw a bunch of times, I'm like, if I was him, I'd cross it over there, and then they would look him off over and over.
And I'm wondering if maybe because they kept doing that over and over and over again, that maybe the team was trying to figure out a different offensive approach, because they'd done it time after time, and you know, a few times we'd get them decent shots, but other times, as soon as it hit counter for Philly, they'd find themselves in trouble. So I'm wondering if Javi was trying to figure out a different way. I mean, I looked at a crazy stat today that he touched the ball 109 times in that game.
And that's, Javi did?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah, that's a lot of.
And I mean, that's what you want out of him. The more touches, the better. So I'm wondering if they're trying to figure out a better offensive approach instead of that, because if that's their only way of doing it, then we might run into trouble if we find some of those defenders that can shut down the wing.
Right. One of the other things that I was noticing, and I don't have Charles Barnard's statistical acumen on pulling up stats and stuff. You know, our good friend Charles, who's always tweeting out RSL stats. But, you know, it seems like Javi is collecting the ball deeper and initiating attacks from deeper, kind of like where Kyle would normally be getting the ball. I felt like I saw Javi getting the ball there a lot more.
Yeah.
And I can't decide if that's good or bad.
You know what? I'm wondering more and more as time goes on, especially because Javier's getting older, that if Javi needs to kind of step back and start letting Luis Gil be that playmaker there in the middle and let him run around and chase down that stuff, only because so he can extend his career. But I'm wondering, you know, thinking about it, if maybe he just, because there's one less midfielder, he has to work harder to go get all those balls. And
yeah, I definitely think there's something to that. You know, that's where the space is, so that's where he comes and gets it. You know, that's where the defense is letting him get the ball, right? So he comes back and collects it from there. I guess we'll see as the next few games go along, you know, how it progresses, because, I mean, you still have, you know, if Gil is higher up and then you have the three forwards, I mean, you still have enough numbers up there for him to pass to.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and I think this team's going to have a totally different mentality when Plata comes back, because the forwards will then have that playmaker, and I think Javi and Gil's not going to have to chase down stuff as much as they need to.
Yeah.
And plus, I don't think we'll run the 4-3-3. I mean, I think that's going to be our primary ones, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see him a few games a year break out the diamond again.
I wonder, Yeah, and I'm trying to think tactically how this would work, but instead of having the 4-3-3 with like Jaime and Plata or Garcia out wide, if you would bring Sabo and Jaime more central, like a 4-4-2, right? Mm-hmm. So they're both kind of central, and then have say Gil and Plata. I don't know, work it out so it's not quite a midfield diamond. More like, you know, have Plata kind of, maybe Plata and Gil kind of more out towards the sides, and then, you know, have Javi in the middle, and then Beckerman is behind them somehow, maybe like a 4-1-3-2, or I don't even know if that formation will work out.
Yeah.
But I'm not. It just seems, I'd like to see Sabo and Jaime together. Work as a pair. I think that'd be interesting.
Yeah. Sure, and if RSL's kind of hit this point now where they have too many strikers, and because of how much they've paid for them, they gotta justify playing them all.
I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think if, I mean, if Plato's healthy, you wouldn't feel bad about sitting Garcia. And, you know, having Sandoval sit's not the end of the world. But, you know, if we have all three of those guys healthy, then, yeah, I definitely think there's probably pressure to play all three of those because, I mean, you paid money for, big money for two of them, and Plata is, you know, your up-and-coming wonder kid, so.
Yeah. There was an idea that at the end of the season that I thought that RSL could use the expansion draft to their advantage and dare either Orlando or New York to take Javier and continue to run the diamond and allow Plata to play that top of the diamond playmaker position, and he'd still be able to play Sabo and Jaime up top, and then you'd have Gil and Luke on the sides. And the more I think about it, the more I like that idea. I mean, you can't do it now because you beat Sit and Javier, and he's the guy that produces offense for us.
Right.
So maybe we have more tactical changes ahead of us.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the hobby thing is kind of like, I mean, if you're playing FIFA or Madden or, you know, NBA 2K or whatever, you know, and you just, you know, playing GM and you're just trading whoever you want because their contract's up and stuff, you know, it's easy there, but I think in this case, you know, Javi's almost become like a, you know, Tim Duncan type player where, I mean, it would seem almost like karma would come back and, you know, get us if we, you know, did something like that to him. I mean, he doesn't want to leave. I mean, he loves it here, so, you know, I think we should just let that thing ride itself out.
Yeah, and part of wondering, because of also how many forwards we have, if we actually consider, you know, selling one of them. Because, you know, here in July, the transfer window is going to be open.
Sell a forward or midfielder?
A forward. Because right now, I mean, you also have Devin Sandoval. Plata is going to come back. You're pretty much loaded there. You could probably offload somebody.
Yeah, you wonder, though, if they're going to ship some of those guys over to help with the Monarchs.
Yeah, and you also have a, trying to remember his name off the top of my head. He just came up through the academy, and we signed him at the beginning of this year. At the end of last.
Salcedo?
Yeah. He's also going to play up top for us. And so we are pretty much loaded at that position, man.
Yeah, I mean, we got Jordan Allen, we got Sandoval, we got Garcia, we got Saucedo.
I think I see Jordan Allen more as a midfielder, a defender, than anything.
Yeah, we keep slapping him up top there, so I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah. Looking at our midfield after, you know, Beckerman, Gil, Morales, and Mulholland, You got like a Jordan Allen, a John Sturzer. So not saying the talent dips off there, but it's not starting for your world, for your national team talent.
Yeah.
So, but you know, something crazy that I found today actually on Garcia is when he came over and we bought him, he had 47 appearances in, you know, a 2 year for his team that he came from. And in those 47 appearances, he had 7 goals. And so far, he's played in 49 matches for us and has 8. So I think we're seeing exactly who he is.
That is interesting. You know, I kind of expected him to, I don't know, develop maybe a little more quickly than he has. I mean, not to say that he's a bad player. I mean, he's, you know, miles better than, you know, when we had Pablo Campos as our fourth striker, right? So, you know, I'm not complaining that way at all. I like Garcia and think he's fine. I mean, I don't think I would like it if he was our first striker, though. But, you know, I think I just was hoping he would kind of develop more like Plata has, right?
Yeah. Which, you know, Plata might go down as one of the, like, biggest steals in MLS history. And we gave up, like, a third rounder or something like that for him.
Yeah.
All I know, we're missing the days of Yura.
Oh, man, yeah. You think Yura will ever come back to MLS?
My guess is no.
Every now and again you hear a rumor about it, but I doubt that. I mean, you'd think that he'd be able to stay over there at this point.
Yeah. And the beauty of it all, I mean, it's a really screwy, loopy MLS style rule, but if he comes back, the last team that had him under contract still owns his rights. If he decides to come back to MLS, he's ours.
Yeah, I'm sure though, if he came back in a couple of years, I'm sure it would be like kind of like when we traded back for Robbie Finley. Somebody would give us, you know, $50,000 or $100,000 or something, and you know, we trade him the rights, just, you know, because that's how MLS seems to do things. So.
Yeah, or we trade him to Toronto. I mean, but he's killing it in Russia right now. I mean, he's made 44 appearances and has 21 goals. Dude's just killing it.
Yeah, yeah. It would have been nice if he would have stayed, played for the U.S. instead of playing for Armenia, but
yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah, but speaking of Toronto, they're the next team up. What do you think?
Well, actually, before we get to Toronto, in the Philly game, it was pretty funny, that first goal that Javi had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I sit, my season tickets are behind the north goal.
Okay.
And so the ball came pretty much right at me, right? And where that kick was, right on the edge of the box, you know, I turned to my friends and I said, you know, these are those free kicks that you see players try to make all the time and, you know, it never works. They're way too close, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, this is just going to be a waste because you can't make it from there. And what does he do? Just slaps that thing right over the top of Sabo's head and goes right into the top corner. That was awesome.
You know, something awesome that I saw that Real Salt Lake did is, I don't know if it's a GoPro or what exactly it is, but they now have a camera set up right behind, I'm assuming, both goals.
Yeah, and I see him adjust them every now and again.
Yeah, and every time there's a goal scored, they post it as a Vine on their Twitter page, and so you're seeing these goals being scored right behind, so you see what the goalie sees, and it's awesome, and you can see it in that hobby one. I mean, he sneaks it in there between everybody, and just keeper doesn't even have a chance.
Yeah, I mean, in defense of their, well, I guess either the goalie should have been on that side and trusted his wall, or the wall needed to be blocking right there because they didn't seem to do either.
Yeah.
It seemed like he put the wall on the same side he was standing, so.
Yeah, and, you know, this goalie is a world-class goalie. I mean, he's a national team starter, but something I noticed that Arcel didn't take advantage of is he gets jittery really fast. I mean, he was getting real nervous. He was jumping around. He had no clue what he was doing, and we kind of just didn't take advantage. We should have been taking a lot of long-range shots just to mess with him.
Yeah, I mean, his clearances were really strange. I mean, he was making all sorts of weird contortions with his body to save shots, and, you know, balls maybe he should have caught or, you know, punched easily was like, you know, he's fearing for his life or something. So, I don't know. I really wasn't that impressed with him during the game, and I don't know if he was just having a bad game or what, but
yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. He seemed a little bit skittish.
What about Raimondo? I mean, rightfully, I'd probably put one goal that was scored against us on him, and that'd be that first one, because he kind of parried it the wrong direction. How did he
yeah.
look?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the first goal, I'd probably have to double-check the replay, but it seemed like, you know, with the deflection, he was more concerned with just making sure it didn't go in the net, so he was kind of falling into the net and just used his hand to, like, paw it out, so he didn't have a really good chance to parry it away, and when you clawed it out, he just kind of, you know, laid it down on a platter in front of our own goal, which isn't good.
Yeah.
So those ones are always hard. The own goal, too, that Olave had, you know, Raimondo had totally come off his line and was heading over to, I don't know if he was trying to collect the ball where the trajectory was going or just, you know, close the angle down for where the ball was headed, but and that's probably what he should have done, but man, that just that was the lamest own goal ever.
Yeah, and to me that's what it kind of looked like, because he was trying to chase it down and get it, and then Olave just, he put a foot on it when he probably should have just let it go. I mean, have more faith in your keeper in that position.
And yeah, those are, I mean, I guess I don't know as a defender, what do you do? Because you always want to block the cross, right?
Yeah.
But if you're sticking your foot out and you can't really get it, you know, do you want to, you know, if you're only going to hit it with your toe, right? I mean, do you pull that back or, I don't know.
Yeah. And it was crazy because right before the game, RSL was bragging about, or I'm not sure if they were bragging or how exactly it all came out, but was talking about how they hadn't suffered an own goal since 2012.
Yeah.
So you're looking at almost a three-year span where we just, our defense doesn't score on itself, and well, that's over now.
Yeah, it was sad.
So I'm assuming you were on the side where when Raimondo decided to juke Sebastian Letou.
Yeah, that's, I don't know, it's funny, the whole crowd went, you know, gave him the ooh, ah, cheer, all that stuff, and I mean, it was cool and all, but man, that's scary.
Yeah.
It makes me nervous when goalies do that, because if you mess up, or if, you know, when the keeper does that, and they mess up, then you end up like Tyler Derrick for Houston, and you're punching the ball into your own net because, you know, the striker gets it. Did you see that goal that Houston had, or that gave up?
I didn't.
He tried kind of a similar thing as Raimondo, but he was trying to clear the ball, and the forward got to it first, so then it was going back towards their own net, and he's just chasing it, pretty much trying to tackle the striker, and then ended up just punching it into his own net, so that was pretty hilarious. But, I mean, Raimondo's got great feet, you know. Dunny always says, you know, he's one of the best keepers MLS has ever had with his feet, but, man, that makes me nervous.
Yeah. But, I mean, Philly was a weird game. I mean, even the PK call at the end, to me, I didn't see no foul.
No. In the field of play, I bet the ref would probably give that as a foul half the time, maybe, or a third of the time. I mean, that dude did put his arm out, you know, to kind of arm bar him.
Yeah.
I think Luke mostly fell down or, you know, was falling over trying to lunge at the ball more than from the arm bar.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think. I think the game probably deserved a draw. But I don't think we deserved a penalty.
Yeah. I mean, and we were pushing. I honestly think if that didn't happen, we probably would have got one or at least gotten really close. I know RSL kind of has that weird knack inside home openers of pulling off that crazy, stupid things at this time. I mean, I remember my favorite game I ever went to was a home opener in 2010, right, and they were celebrating winning the championship, and we had to go to stoppage time and score like 2 minutes into stoppage time just to walk away with a draw.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm glad it ended with a draw. I was pretty indifferent, actually, with the result of the game. Even if we would have lost, like if Philly would have converted that free kick, just because the game was so wacky, I wasn't going to get worked up about, you know, if we lost or drew that game, because that's just one of those games where, I mean, there's nothing really you can do about it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's games at the end of the year, and you'll look back and be like, man, we should have won that one, and this is one of them we'll definitely look back and be like, we should have lost.
Probably. Just with the craziest. I mean, it's not like the Philly game last year in Philly, right? Do you remember that one when we had it won, and then Adu came and scored in stoppage time, I think it was, or the game in New York when Dax McCarty did a diving header in stoppage time for a draw, I think it was, or mm-hmm. what was, you know, the Kansas City game here that made it, I guess that was 2 years ago, when they went 3 minutes over, you know, and we lost. I mean, it wasn't like one of those games where you're like, man, if we just would have done this one little thing, you know.
Yeah.
We would be hosting MLS Cup. It wasn't like that. That's just this is a game where you just say, whatever.
And wasn't that like year that the MLS actually had to come out and tell everybody the like added on time is suggested if it's really up to whoever? And
I remember after that game, I saw a couple people on Twitter like say they went back and timed, you know, stoppage time, and because, you know, Javi did this and, you know, ball went out of play for this and this and this and this, you could, you know, justify going 7 minutes instead of four. And then every other game I watched the whole year, I don't think I saw another game, you know, I mean, it might go like a minute over, and just was comical. But that's neither here nor there.
And it's still a joke today. I mean, when they're, especially on Twitter, it's 3 minutes stoppage time, and everybody's like, well, maybe.
It's kind of like we're going to Fergie time, right, from Man U days.
Yep.
It's however long it takes to score a goal, and then the game will be over.
Yes, sir.
So, anyway, we can talk about Toronto now. How about that?
Yeah, let's talk Toronto.
All right, so bye week this week, so no games, which is kind of crazy, third week of the season. Toronto, they played Chicago last week, and that game was a little bit weird for them. They lost the game after they crushed Vancouver the first week, if I remember right. I think they won 3-0, and then last week they lost to Chicago 2-0, and they got a silly red card. You know, that was one, Justin Morrow, is that his name? Jordan Morrow. Mm-hmm. No, Justin Morrow, that's right, Justin Morrow. Anyway, he got a red card for denying a goal-scoring opportunity when he slid and got the ball, and it's not a red card. So I'd actually be kind of surprised if that appeal doesn't stand. Like, they said they were going to appeal it, so I'd be surprised if the league didn't
reverse
that.
To me, it looks like he's playing the ball, and, you know, that's the whole key of it, is if you can get to the ball before you get to the man, then they're not, 9 times out of 10, not going to call anything. So I kind of think they kind of got the short end of the stick there, but, you know, you got to give it to Columbus, especially after that.
Oh, it was Columbus, not Chicago. Sorry. Yeah. You're right. Sorry, my bad, Columbus.
As soon as Columbus realized what was going on, they just pounced on Toronto. And it was good to see them do something like that.
Did both their goals happen after the red card? Do you know?
Yes, they did.
The second one did for sure. I can't remember if the first one did. Did it?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so Toronto, you know, they're the big flashy new toy, but and them and, you know, the two expansion teams, but, you know, they brought in Josie Altidore. They brought in the dude from Italy.
Sebastian Giovinco.
Giovinco, who's, what, 5'5"? A tower of a man compared to Plata, right?
Yeah.
5'4". 5'4". Ooh, 2 inches on Plata. And he's supposed to be, you know, from the little bits I've seen of him play, he, you know, he seems very skillful on the ball and should prove to be difficult to contend with. I think it's silly that Toronto paid that much money for, or, you know, brought Josie back to pay him that much money. I don't think Josie is worth that much at this point. He's not a bad striker, just not like, you know, millions of dollars worth of DP striker.
Yeah. I like, you know, this team, they're spending a lot of money, but their defense is very, very suspect. Which is kind of fun to watch. And so I think the key with Toronto is as long as you can attack them, they're going to buckle and they're going to fold.
Yeah. Do you think we'll get a chance to see our buddy Robbie Finley?
I believe we will because they're starting him.
Oh, are they?
Or at least they've been starting him the last two games.
Okay.
They've been playing him up top with Josie. Unless they want to give, you know, Luke Moore a start. And, you know, they might have Robbie start just because he knows us and knows our team. I mean, we're running a different formation, so we don't know how much he might know of that, but.
Yeah. I just realized that they have Colin Warner on their team, too. I guess I had forgotten that he had moved over from Montreal.
Didn't he play for RSL?
Yeah, Montreal took him in their expansion draft.
So now we have an RSL of the North?
Well, they only got two guys, so I don't know if that really counts, but the RSL players do seem to pool all over the place.
Yeah.
So.
It's not like random players are showing up. It's like guys that actually started for us and contributed.
Yeah, right. So it'll be interesting to see how Toronto, you know, does here. I remember last season, you know, that was supposed to be the big game of the year with Bradley coming to town, and it was supposed to be, you know, a title weight fight, and we just hammered them. And I don't think that it will be the case this time since we're still working out bugs ourselves, but it'll be interesting to see how their quote-unquote high-powered team with all their money, you know, stacks up with us.
Yeah. I mean, if I remember right, last year we had the PK and then Gil scored. And I think we just started getting under the skin of, like, Defoe and Bradley and stuff like that, that we just kept thrashing on them.
Yeah, last year they kept trying ball after ball after ball over the top to Defoe. And they came close a couple times, but they never connected on him. And that was pretty much their whole strategy, it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we'll be curious to see how they try to attack us this time. I would hope that Schuler and Olavi should be able to deal with Altidore pretty easily.
Yeah.
He's not, I guess, the fearsome post-up guy that he probably should be.
Yeah. But, you know, from a person like a United States standpoint, it's nice to see Bradley and Josie Altidore getting to play together, because I think for a national team, that's going to do wonders if they already have that chemistry going into the camps and games.
No, no doubt. I mean, I'm, you know, super glad that he's out of that Sunderland situation, because that was clearly not working out for him. for whatever reason. You know, and I'm glad he's playing back in the U.S. I just hope that he doesn't have a good game when we play him.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that I like it when they actually bring in a lot of our guys together, especially the younger guys like down in Club Tijuana, how they have Joe Corona and Paul Areola playing together. And yeah. So they have that chemistry when they come into the camps. And so as much as Klinsmann hates it, I think it's best for the national team to have Josie and Bradley together.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would only help unless they decide that they hate each other. But I don't imagine that'll happen, so it'll only help, you know, the U.S. when they play together in the future.
Yeah.
So, trying to think, had something else I was going to say about Josie, and then it totally just slipped my brain. I hate it when that happens.
Josie is Josie.
Yeah, I don't want it to come across like I'm hating on Josie, like, you know, I think he's a terrible player.
But, yeah.
I just hope he doesn't play well in this game. So something that was kind of interesting that I read on Twitter the other day from Real Salt Lake, the Twitter account over there, was, you know, this next game is going to be on a Sunday, and then we have two more that are on Sundays in June, I believe. And they were saying that originally they had us scheduled for 7 home Sunday games, and then they talked them down to 3. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I guess the national, you know, the broadcast partners and stuff, they like showing Rio Tinto, and they, you know, they have those allotted time slots on Sundays now.
Yep.
So they wanted to show us more, and I guess we'll have to see how these home games are going to go being on Sundays. But, you know, I hope they don't start making them all on Sundays all the time.
No, I don't think they will, but, you know, it's actually nice to be on Sundays every once in a while, because that's, I mean, this TV deal that they signed is perfect. I mean, if you think about it, you have MLS soccer starting on Friday night and going until Sunday afternoon, and so you have like 3 days straight of pure MLS soccer just building the sport here in America. And right now, you know, you'll have the NCAA tournament winding down and ending. The NBA playoffs will soon hit, and as soon as it dies down, it's going to be pretty much soccer and baseball. And I know baseball kind of gets monotonous and drags on because you're seeing teams play 5-6 games a week.
Yeah.
And so that them taking over the weekends, especially with, you know, the NFL and college football not going on right now, is smart. And so, you know, anytime they want to put us on national TV, I say go for it.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope it doesn't, you know, I hope the stadium doesn't look empty, I guess.
I don't think it will.
I mean, I think it's one thing for RSL and for the Jazz or whoever to sell playoff games and stuff, but I'm curious to see what just a regular season, you know, especially the beginning of the season where it doesn't really matter, you know, how many fans turn out for it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think we're going to do pretty good because, what was it, 2 years ago we had a Sunday playoff game, and that place was packed. And so yeah. I think people are, I mean, not to hate on the Jazz or anything like that. RSL's kind of that team right now that's your title contender for the state.
Yeah. Though, you know, I think a lot of people would justify, you know, the people that don't want to go to things on Sunday, they, you know, try to rationalize a playoff game where I don't know if they would rationalize a regular season game. So we'll see.
Yeah, just call it family home evening a day early or something.
That's right.
That might justify it.
Bring the kids.
Yes.
Maybe if we get someone to say a prayer before the game, then it'll be okay.
Teach them how to teach them the sport.
Love their neighbor.
The Church of RSL.
That's right.
So speaking of playoffs, do you think RSL is a playoff team this early in the season?
I don't think we're playing like a playoff team right now. I think RSL will end up making the playoffs. But I mean, I think we have a lot of room to improve. I think, you know, Seattle and LA and FC Dallas are probably locks for three of the six spots. I think you get RSL, Portland, San Jose, Kansas City. I don't have a lot of faith in Houston or Colorado. Yeah, for sure not Colorado. Hopefully they don't make me eat my words, but...
Yeah, and they sold a player today, Sean Brown. They sent him to Norway, so that team, they're a little weaker right now.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird deal, right?
Yeah.
To send him somewhere in March?
Yeah, and I think from the sounds of it, his agent wanted him to be in Europe so he could be getting better looks from European clubs.
Well, of course his agent would want that.
Yeah. More money, more problems.
Yeah. We'll see if he follows, you know, the Breck Shea path and waddles his way back here eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I mean, what do you think? Do you think RSL will make the playoffs? Do you think they're a playoff team?
I think right now they wouldn't be in the playoffs. I think at the end of the year they will. Seattle and LA look too good. FC Dallas I'm still a little unsure of because, like, last year Vancouver started 5-0 and we all saw how they ended up. So I'm still not sold on Dallas, but I know LA and Seattle will be there, and I know Portland's going to be there, and I think we're going to be fighting for that 4th through 6th seed with everybody else. And I think Colorado's more than likely going to be at the bottom. I mean, it's going to be there. The only thing that's scary is Gerard's joining LA, and if they can be outstanding now the way they're doing, imagine them with Gerard there.
Yeah. Though the thing going for us is most of the time people joining midseason don't really come in and have a big impact. So, you know, Dempsey wasn't really that stellar for Seattle his first 6 months. So we'll have that going for us at least for a little while, and then, you know, we'll see how Gerard's legs hold up, I guess.
Yeah. But. So, what about the Supporter Shield? What do you think there? Who do you think walks away with it?
Oh, Seattle.
Think Seattle walks away?
I think Seattle will get it again. There's no reason why they shouldn't. I mean, if they don't get the Supporter Shield, it's because they either got hit by tons of injuries or they forgot how to drive to the stadium or something.
Mm-hmm. You know, the more I look at it, I'm thinking it goes to an Eastern Conference team.
But who? I mean, none of the Eastern teams have really impressed me so far. I mean, they're all kind of okay, you know?
If I had to pick one right now, I'd probably say DC United. Just they're a smart team. They're a veteran team. They kind of know what they're doing. And the only reason I say it's going to go to an Eastern Conference team is this Western Conference is so stacked right now that it's they're pretty much just going to feed off of each other and be knocking each other out. And LA's going to be fighting with Seattle, and they'll be taking points from each other, and RSL might go sneak ones from them. And you never know with Dallas who they really are.
Yeah, I mean, we thought that last year too, right? I mean, and the West was clearly the better conference, but
yeah,
I mean, our LA and Seattle had, you know, way more points than everybody else. So, you know, I'm kind of wondering if that same sort of thing's going to happen, even though we're all beating each other up, that, you know, if LA and Seattle just stomp everybody that they're supposed to.
Yeah, and if I remember right, though, I want to say that DC, wasn't they there at the end fighting for it, though?
Kind of. I mean, they were, I don't remember how many points they ended up behind them, but it was like one of those, it was like an outside chance. Like, they both, LA and Seattle, would have had to lose, you know, their last several games type of thing.
Yeah.
The one thing about Seattle, though, is, you know, they're trying Brad Evans at center back. They don't have anyone to slot in next to Chad Marshall. And so far, that hasn't been going the best. Brad Evans really isn't a center back. So, I mean, if they end up with a defense like Portland had last year, then, I mean, that could be something that trips them up a little bit, I suppose.
Yeah. Totally have to agree on that one. So, yeah. Anything else you want to run down?
No. Just be interesting to, or you know, I'm excited to watch us play Toronto and see how this 4-3-3 continues to evolve, and as our players get used to it. Hopefully Phillips, I guess he, you know, re-injured that hamstring, so hope that gets better. They don't, I guess they won't rush him back this time, but I imagine we'll see Mansali on with the starting lineup again. And then I'm trying to remember, the Monarchs, will they kick off before their first game? Is that before our next game? Or do they not? They don't start till April, is that right?
Let me look it up real fast. I want to say they kick off this weekend. But I want to say they might be on the road.
I should know when their first home game is. I'm drawing a blank.
I mean, that's going to be fun to watch, too. It is this Sunday. They are in L.A.
Their first game's on a Wednesday, I remember, their first home game.
Maybe, yeah. So they're in L.A., and then they play Portland.
Here?
Nope, in Portland.
Oh.
And then they're home against Portland on the 8th.
Oh, okay, so we'll probably do another pod before that happens, right?
Yeah, try to at least, you know, once a week.
Yeah, so.
I mean, soccer's here now. We can get away doing it once a week.
We might be able to find something always, to talk about.
Soccer's always going on. I mean, next week we might talk about what's going on in Japan.
Ooh, that would be fun. That'd be a league that would be fun to be able to watch over here. I wonder if they have, do you know they have that league online anywhere?
Not that I know of, but it's the internet. You can find everything there.
Well, I'm sure you can find a stream of it somewhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the J League, a few times I've watched it, that's been fun. But anyway, I hope that you guys have all enjoyed listening to us babble a little bit about RSL, MLS, about the games. If you guys have any questions or comments, feel free to post them, you know, on the website.
Twitter works.
Throw them on Twitter. You can find me at @frisbee_rich.
And I'm at A24Bread or @touchline_TBS. Or send them to the Torn by Sports account.
That's right, tornbysports.com for all of your Utah sports needs. Utah Utes, Jazz, Cougars, RSL, anything your heart may desire for Utah sports, we try to cover it there.
Chappie Award-winning site.
That's right, Chappie Award-winning site if you're into that. Hopefully next year we'll get one since, you know, our podcast will be heard by millions by then.
Yeah, we're coming after all the other Torn by podcasts. We're the best. We'll prove it.
That's right, we're coming for you. Watch your back. All right, I'm Richard.
I'm Brett.
Thanks for listening.